There's a little, this, you can't see, this laptop here is sitting on top of like a gearbox, like a suitcase type box. And there was a piece of metal sticking out the front that just caught the cable of my my speaker. So, show of hands, I'm going to do a little bit of polling, and then maybe completely ignore it or maybe adjust some of my content on the fly, we'll see. So, I asked earlier how many of you have already looked at anything to do with ASP.NET RC2, the .NET CLI, and the stuff that's up and coming? How many of you have already looked at it a little bit? Okay, cool. Okay, and how many of you know about RC1, like the current DNX, DNU, DNVM? How many of you have used all of that? Okay, how many of you have just never used ASP.NET Core at all before? And you're just learning about it for the first time now? Okay, great. Awesome. There's a little bit of everybody in here. That's great. Okay, so let's set some expectations. We might as well get started. My name is Glenn Condren. I work on the ASP.NET team with Damien Edwards and co. Where most of my time I have spent working on, the runtime of ASP.NET. So I worked a lot on the DNX, and I worked on the core components that make up ASP.NET Core, not so much on, you know, ASP.NET Core MVC, right? And the higher up the stack you get, the less and less familiar I get with things typically for ASP.NET. And today, what I'm going to talk about is ASP.NET Core, RC2, so Core CLR. We're going to build a console application, and then we're going to turn that console application into a web application, into a web server, effectively, as we'll talk about. Then we're going to do a bunch of stuff with middleware and pipelines and having things go up and down the pipeline. We're going to add some static files in. Basically going to go from scratch, from an empty project, through to something that's doing a little bit of API control, that's doing a little bit of MVC with some controllers, and it's doing a little bit of middleware and logging and things, right? So we're just going to throw a bunch of stuff in. Hopefully, at the end, what I want is for you guys to have an understanding of middleware, how the pipeline works. How many of you think you're very confident in understanding how middleware works, what it is, how you... Okay, cool. So hopefully, at the end, a whole bunch more of you are going to be able to put your hand up when I ask that question. And there's also a little bit about how are you going to handle how middleware impacts day-to-day things that you're going to want to do in an application, like 404s. And things like that, error pages. Okay? So, I also don't know how much, I also, for deep dives, expect and hope that you guys are gonna ask me lots of stuff, and I'll repeat questions, and we'll have a little bit of a conversation, and you'll learn about things that you wanna learn about. Okay, so feel free to throw your hand up, or to yell out questions, and we can talk about them, and we can answer questions, and we can go as we go, all right? Now, let's talk about what an ASP.NET Core application is. An ASP.NET Core application is a web server. It can accept HTTP requests, and it can return HTTP responses, which seems to tick pretty much the boxes of what a web server is. All right? So that's what an ASP.NET Core app. So every time you build and run your ASP.NET Core app, what you have done is you have constructed your very own special web server that only knows how to serve and handle your application. That's basically what you've just done, right? And then you put, you know, IIS or something in front of it just to be able to be in between you and the internet, so that you can get some benefits from IIS, like IIS will take care of launching your custom web server and directing all of the content to it. It'll take care of making sure it's going, and so all it really is in this new world is a reverse proxy. It's just sitting there in order to pass traffic from the outside to you. And you gain a few benefits from that. You gain some benefits like, you know, IIS has had a very, very long time of people trying to break it. So it's very good at handling malform requests and things like that. Right? Cool. I wanted to talk about that here because lots of people seem to find it confusing about where IIS sits and why they care about it and why it should matter, how it works. And that's basically it. You can, if you really wanted to, run your custom-built web server, expose the port that it's listening onto the internet, and the world would be great. But you may be some, maybe there's something inside Kestrel that IIS would have protected you from, or maybe, or if you're doing that and you're in production, you now have to work out how to keep your application process running, right? Because it's just an exe that you've run. How do you keep that thing going forever and never have it go down, right? How do you restart it? All those things. Okay, so it's a console application. That's what a web app is. Let's do something. Let's make one. What I'm going to do is here, I have the .NET CLI. Most of you probably haven't played around with the .NET CLI, so we're going to, this first bit of this talk is just a little interlude into what the .NET CLI is and how you're going to build and interact with the .NET toolchain. So .NET is the command. You type .NET blah to do anything. And one of the things that .NET has is new. So I can say .NET new. And that drops me a little, that drops me a, where am I? I'm not in the right spot, unfortunately. So I'm going to delete all of that. I'm going to delete this, and I'm going to rmproject.json, and I'm going to go into the deep dive folder, and I'm going to do that again. Okay, if any of you are following along at home with me, at home I mean like out there in your chair, then you can, the only thing I've done here to help is .NET new currently does not drop a NuGet config file. So I have a NuGet.config one directory up that just has some feeds in it, just so that I can get the latest non-release, not on NuGet yet bits. So if you do start playing with the .NET CLI, the first thing you're going to do is do .NET new. Then you need to do .NET restore because you want to download all the NuGet packages that my application depends upon. This is where it's going to fall over for you because you don't have any feeds configured and none of the packages you're trying to download are on NuGet.org, right? So you can grab one of those NuGet config files from github.com/ASPNet/CLI samples. There's NuGet configs on there that you can go grab. You can put them in your app if you want to go along with this. Okay, so let's open this thing up and have a look at what it did for me, what it made us. I'm going to say, this is interesting. Required assets to build and debug are missing from your project. Would you like me to add them? Yeah, that seems like something I'd like. Cool. So this dropped me this .vs code folder here. And what's inside this .vs code folder is a launch.json and a task.json, both of which are files that are necessary for me to be able to do Command-Shift-B inside Visual Studio Code, and to be able to press F5 inside Visual Studio Code and have it run and hit a breakpoint and debug. Okay? So if you're using the latest Visual Studio Code, the 1.0 released Visual Studio Code, and you go to the OmniSharp-VS Code repo on GitHub and download the VizX, you can install it and you'll be able to do this stuff. Some of you may have already been familiar with this, some of you maybe not. So now let's run this thing. .NET run. What .NET run does is it compiles my application and then it runs it. It's amazing. As you can see here, it just said there's nothing to do because I've already compiled. None of our code has changed since I built it inside the editor a minute ago. Okay, so here's a project JSON. This is a little bit different to the project JSON that those of you who have been using RC1 looks like. There's a few different things. I'm not going to go into heaps of detail about what this is and is not. If you guys want me to, bring me back to it a little bit later on, like towards the end, and I will go in a lot more if there's time. Okay. So dependency section is still the same, and this is the most difference that you see right now, which is this new Net Core App TFM that we will talk about. Probably we'll mention it briefly, but not now. Okay. So I have a console application. It says hello world. So I am like half of the way towards our glorious web server that can accept and respond. Do accept HTTP requests and make HTTP responses. What's missing in order to turn our application is Kestrel. Does anybody already think they know what or are familiar with what Kestrel is and how it plays into this world? What it is? Does anybody know what Kestrel is? Does anybody heard of it? Has all the rest of you heard of it? No idea. Hand up if you have no idea what Kestrel is. Excellent. You're all about to learn at least one thing today. Kestrel is an is the thing which accepts a HTTP request from the network, turns it into a HTTP context, and then passes it through your application pipe, your middleware pipeline, and we'll talk about the middleware pipeline later. So Kestrel is the thing that knows how to bind to a port and listen for network traffic and translate that network traffic into something that the rest of the stack can listen to. And it's implemented using a library called libuv, which was the same, it's the same networking, it's the same piece of native, it's a native assembly written for Node, and it's statically linked into Node.exe, so it's the same underlying networking stack that Node uses, and a few other people now. It's cross-platform, which means it works on all of the operating systems that ASP.NET Core supports. But it's not the only thing that can do that piece. There's this other thing called WebListener. Is any of you familiar with WebListener? Do you know that name? Yeah. Once again, the two people that went to the training on Monday. So WebListener, oh, you didn't go? Maybe not, that's okay. So WebListener is the same as Kestrel, but it's Windows only, and it uses HTTP sys. So there is basically two, I think, scenarios where you might need WebListener instead of Kestrel, generally to do with like integrated Windows authentication stuff where Kestrel doesn't really know anything about it. Right? But in general, you should be able to just use Kestrel for everything, and it's going to keep getting better and better and better. And yeah, we would remove WebListener. We will get rid of WebListener as soon as Kestrel can do everything WebListener can, and until that, otherwise they'll both exist. So as long as there's a couple of things that WebListener can do, there'll be two. Yes. I don't know. Maybe. If it can. Who knows? We're not looking at it right now because it's like not, we have far more important things to worry about right now than trying to move that sort of functionality over. But, you know, maybe not. Probably, but who knows? Okay, so we need some Kestrel in our console application in order to make it be a web thing. So let's go and add some Kestrel. So I'm going to add a package, microsoft.aspnetcore.server.kestrel. Right, I'm going to go 1.0.0-rc2-star. Then I'm going to go .NET restore and hope that I typed it right and that I remember the name correctly. Okay. So this is just me adding a NuGet package reference and then hitting the interwebs to download the said package. Except there's not much internet hitting happening right near now, hopefully, because I have done this, ran through this about four times in the last couple of days, so everything should be on my local machine already, unless, okay. Now, I wanted to show you this. Unless a new build has come out, which looks like it has. So there's an interesting thing that happened here. There was an error. And it says, error, this thing here, I don't know if highlighting it actually helps you see it any better because it's kind of makes it darker. It says, error, package newtonsoft.json 8.0.3 is not compatible with NetCore app 1.0. Right? It says this list of target TFMs, this NET20, NET35, NET40, NET45, these two portable profiles, that Newtonsoft.json supports that list of things. It does not have NetCore app in there. But our console application is a NetCore app TFM, which means it can't restore and pick it can't pick which assembly it should use inside the Newtonsoft.json package. So what we're going to do is, down here, we're going to say imports, and we're going to say import DNX Core 50. So for those of you who have done RC1, you may be familiar with DNX Core 50 as the TFM of what RC1 applications are. You put in your framework section DNX Core 50 to represent the fact that you're running on Core CLR on the DNX, right? That's what these all are. These names are all identifying the .NET framework that you're running on, right? Like NET2.0, the portable profiles, all these things. So what we're saying by doing an import to DNX Core 50 is, yeah, we think DNX Core 50 is close enough to NetCore app that if there's something that has DNX Core 50, just use it, it'll be fine, okay? So you can basically shortcut the logic that NuGet has that knows about TFM orderings and stuff and say, oh, I know what I'm doing, go and pick this one. It can be fairly dangerous, so you know, great power and great responsibility and things like that to make sure that you don't like pull in something that's completely broken, because it is possible to completely break things. If you pull like a .NET Framework 2.0 assembly into your like brand new Core CLR application, that's probably not going to work real good for you. Right? Okay, so we've added Kestrel as a package, and now we're going to do something that's new in RC2. I'm going to write "Hello from Maine" in here, and then I'm going to go host equals new web host builder. All right. And then I am going to add a using statement to get a web host builder. Now, a web host builder is how you stitch together all the pieces that turn your console application into an ASP.NET application. So we're going to go var web host equals new web host builder, and we're going to say dot build, which gives me a, which returns a host. So I'm just doing using method chaining here. So I'm just going newing up my web host builder. When you go dot build, it gives you a host, a web host, and you can run a web host. Right? So web host builder is basically is how I set up and configure what my application is going to do. And then when I call run, that's a signal to the host to go and listen on a port and start accepting HTTP traffic, hopefully. Okay? There's some things you need to do, though. You need to tell, like if you were to try and run this now, if we're trying to run this now, we would get an exception. And we would get an exception because we haven't told the web host builder what whether to use Kestrel or not use Kestrel or use something else. So when we haven't given it a startup method or a startup type, and even if it did have a startup type, we would get a different exception telling us you don't have a server configured. So let's go dot use Kestrel, right, to tell it to use Kestrel instead of anything else. And then we're going to say dot configure, and we're going to give that an app, and we're going to go like this. Actually, this is a like that. And then we're going to go app.run, and we're going to say C goes to C dot response dot write async. I know none of this is actually working yet. I'm going to control dot my way to glory in a minute. Okay. Hello. Okay. So we're missing whatever app is. That's because we don't have the app builder, and we're missing write async because that's inside that namespace, and we haven't had added a semicolon to the end of our thing. Control Shift B, tell me if it's spelled correctly. Now, what we've done here is we have, let's move this to the side a little bit. So what I've done here is I've created a host builder. I've said use Kestrel to take the HTTP requests and turn them into HTTP contexts, and then I've said configure. And I've given it a, and I have given it here, like, so configure can accept an action of iApplication Builder, which is what I've given it. So this app is an iApplication Builder. And in there I've said, application builder, run, do this. And this C is my HTTP context. This is my context that Kestrel created for me. Okay? So now, if I go .NET run over here, now I have hello from main. It's telling me that I'm in the production hosting environment, which is the default. It's telling me where my content root path is. And it's telling me that it's listening on localhost 5000, which is the default port and the default URL that it will bind to without us telling it otherwise. Which means theoretically, if I come over here and I go to localhost 5000, it says hello. Look at that. Millions of dollars worth of computer science which went into displaying that hello on the screen. Yeah, thanks. Okay, so we've managed to make a web page say hello using, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants and 30 years worth of computer science. So now the URL is interesting. We said, it said it's listening on localhost. That's the default. And if any of you are, but it is localhost, which means you can't access this thing from outside this machine. And if any of you are familiar with Docker and are going to try and run ASP.NET Core inside a Docker container, one of the things you have to do is not bind to localhost. Because otherwise you're trying to access the ASP.NET Core app from outside the container. You're on a different network. Right? So you want to be able to change that. And you can change it a couple of ways. You can come in here and you can say use URLs. Right? See all these methods here? And you could put in a different one, right? I could say HTTP star port 5000 or whatever, right, to change the URL. Or you could set the, or there is a default kind of configuration. One of the things you can do on here is say use configuration, and it would accept the, if who's familiar with the ASP.NET Core configuration object, like the I configuration where you add, a couple of people. Okay, so there is a configuration system that I don't think we're gonna get to talk about much today, but, and it'll be, it's definitely in the templates that we use to, it's key value based. So you can basically create a configuration object, tell it where to get configuration from, whether it's the environment with environment variables or which files to use. And then you can say get configuration.get and you give it a key name and it'll give you back a configuration value. The one that we set up for you by default in the templates is a JSON, has a couple of JSON files and you can put your config inside the JSON files. So you can, you could make one of these here, set it up, give it a bunch of different configuration information, and then pass it into the web host builder in order to control where it gets its configuration from. But there's also this default, this thing called default. And what that does, it says, use the use all of your default configuration logic to find things. And what that means is that the web host builder is going to look in the environment to see whether or not you've set any environment-specific stuff. It's going to look in a config file called hosting.json in the root of your app, and it's going to use the args that I just passed in here to see if you've specified anything specific from the command line. Once you've done that, you could do things like set environment variables to say server.urls equals... this may actually not work in this particular context. Like that, yeah. The dot is unfortunately special on Mac, which makes it difficult to set in the console. So you could set an environment variable, or we could pass it in the command line. Okay, that's how we. This is how. That's that method is where like the hosting.json file that specifies the name, the URL you're going to port to comes together. If you don't do what I just did, there's no configuration set up. There's no way for you to change localhost to star, except by one of those things that we just talked about. Okay, so now we have an amazing application which comes, which just returns hello. However, this app, this run, app.run that we're doing is interesting. It says it adds a terminal middleware delegate to the application's request pipeline. And that what that means is that this, what this app here is actually for, it's for you to build up a pipeline of middleware. It looks something like this, okay? So you have your request come in, it comes in off the network. Kestrel turns it into a HTTP context. Then that HTTP context goes through a pipeline of middleware until something returns, or it gets to the end. If it gets to the end, it returns 404. And then the context comes all the way back up until it gets to Kestrel, and then Kestrel sends a response back, the HTTP request and response. Does that make sense? Okay, that's what the middleware pipeline is. It's amazing. So what our middleware pipeline looks right now, it looks like this. There is a middleware pipeline, it has one thing in it, and that thing just returns a string, which means it doesn't matter what I do to our running application, it is always going to return hello, right? It doesn't matter what URL I request, it doesn't matter about pretty much anything that I do. Is this going to compile? Aha. It doesn't matter what I do here, right? It still just keeps returning hello. Because the only thing that the custom web server that we just built knows how to do is return hello every time anybody asks it for anything. Okay? So, we have a piece of middleware, and all it does is say hello. That's great. So what I'm going to do is change this this message to say hello from the end of the pipeline. Okay, we're going to say hello from the end of the pipeline, and I'm going to cut this. And actually, I'm not going to do that yet because I might do something else and just silly and forget. Normally, you don't do this in line here where you say configure, give it an application delegate, right? Normally, the way that we expect people to do this is what I'm going to show you now, which is where you create, have a class, by convention we call it startup, and it's just a standard class, and then over here in your program, you say, instead of configure, you use startup, and you give it the type that you're going to use as your startup class, right? And then inside your startup class, you can have a configure method, public void configure, and it accepts an iApplication builder. We'll call it app by convention. Once again, it doesn't actually matter what it's called. And then we will control dot our way to glory. Huh? Oh, spelt the, what was that, sorry?
It's not inside the class.
Oh yeah, it's not inside the class. Thanks. Like that. For some reason I was seeing the class definition as the constructor and wasn't actually registering that I had done something silly. Okay. This is kind of what this would look like by default when you're using this. This is what you would get in our templates, for example. So now we have a special class, and all that class's job is to do is to build up our middleware pipeline. Okay, and over here, our program main is going to say, we're telling our program main what class to use. Doesn't have to be called startup, iApplication builder doesn't have to be called app. This is all convention. Does, however, have to have a public void configure, because that's the method we're going to call. Yeah?
Why?
What? Well, no, I mean, why does an interface help? Okay. So if there was an interface, we can follow this through. If there was an interface called like iStartup class, then inside Web Host Builder, we would have to scan your application, everything in your application, find anything that implements iStartup Builder, iStartup class, and then we would have to get it and then do it, right? Whereas if you just tell us which one, we just know. We don't have to scan every single type inside your project in order to be able to work out what the startup class is. Yeah? Oh, I see. Yeah, I think we're talking about doing that right now, basically. To maybe have like a base class or an interface, something to give some more structure to this class. It hasn't landed quite yet, but I think there may even be a pull request out for it to do something like that just to make this better. Yeah, sorry, I misunderstood it initially. Yeah.
But isn't that because of dependency injection?
What?
You can do dependency injection.
Absolutely, you can. But the interface may not, but a base class that does the same thing that you can do stuff in might be beneficial. We're talking about stuff like that now. Okay, so let's do some things. We have an app and it has a pipeline, and when we get to the end of the pipeline, we return hello from blah. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to add some MVC in here. ASP.NET Core.MVC. And then I'm going to go 1.0.0-RC2-star again and not have an L here because that is definitely not valid JSON. And then I'm going to go .NET restore in order to get down my packages. And I'm kind of deliberately going through this manual process of adding packages, restoring, going back, running, just so you have to give you guys a feel of what it's like. Part of my intent here is to give you guys a feel of what it's like to work with the .NET CLI and build up an application, right? Okay, so we've done a restore. We've got a whole bunch of packages we've just installed. And now we have MVC types in our project. We're not using them yet. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to come down here, and I'm going to say app.useMVC. We might say useMVC with default route, just because we can. Okay? Actually, let's not do that. Let's go app.map. And then we're going to say /MVC. And then I'm going to get MVC app in here. And I'm going to have this. Since this is a deep dive, let's do something a little bit interesting. And then I'm going to go MVC app dot use MVC with default route. Okay? Does anyone have any idea what that does? Okay, one person. Okay, cool. So what's happening here is I've kind of forked the middleware pipeline. As a request comes in, if the request was on /MVC, it's going to use the pipeline that I build up inside this function here. And if it's not, then it's going to go back, it's going to use the main pipeline. Right? So Now, if I go and go .NET run, I'll get an exception, but I want to do this deliberately so that you can understand. The reason I'm going to get an exception here is because there's a thing that these guys talked about a minute ago called dependency injection baked into the core of ASP.NET Core. And what this error message is saying, it's actually a pretty good error message, is unable to find required services, please add all the required services by calling add MVC inside your configure services method. We don't have a configure services method, but as well as configure, you can go public void configure services, I service collection services, right? And then you can go services.addMVC. Right? So what happens in that configure services method is when the web host builder is stitching together your app, it looks at your startup class and it creates a service collection and it adds a few default services that everybody's got in every ASP.NET Core collection application. Things like iApplication environment that tells you whether you're production or not and things like that. iLogger factory, which we'll show in a bit. They all get added to the service collection. Then it calls your configure services method, giving it the service collection. You can then add more stuff, do things, and then after that, this service provider is built, and everything in ASP.NET Core, all of the libraries that we build and we use, all of MVC, uses that same service collection and all the services that are registered in that service collection to resolve their own types. So if there's anything inside MVC and you want to change the way a build works, you could implement it yourself, add it inside that services method, and MVC will use it. Or Entity Framework will use it, or any of our stack. So you can replace individual components of anything in ASP.NET Core from inside that method. Yes?
Can you create separate service collections if you fork the pipeline?
No. No, you can't. I don't know. You can't have like a different service collection for a different fork in the pipeline, as far as I'm aware. Yeah. Interesting question, though. So now I have my just request goes to there, and if I get MVC, what happened was I got a 404 because MVC is, we haven't actually really built an MVC application yet, right? So let's do a few things. We're going to add a folder. We're going to call it controllers. Well, you know, hopefully it'll be called controllers. Then we're going to add a new file. We're going to make home controller.cs. Then I'm going to go like this, and we're going to have public string index, and it's just going to return hello from MVC, right? And then we're going to go .NET build. Well, we're going to cancel this. We'll go .NET run again, and hopefully when we now hit that MVC route, and only when we hit that MVC route, we're going to start seeing MVC. And when we hit our other route, we're going to not see MVC. All right? So now what we've done is we've built this pipeline. It's a little bit different to the pipeline that we had before. So we showed you the picture of a standard middleware pipeline looks like. Then this is the middleware pipeline we had originally when we just returned hello. Now we do this. So as a request comes in, we're saying, is it /MVC? If it is /MVC, I want you to go down this MVC middleware pipeline. If not, go through to the return string middleware. Yeah. That's MVC's logic. MVC looks for controllers. And when I said use MVC with default route, what that means is, what that means is there's a default route already defined, which is look for a home controller and an action index and then return that thing. So that's just the way that MVC works. Yeah. Okay. So this is now our middleware pipeline. It looks a little bit custom, a little bit different because it forks off. This isn't typically the way you would do routing. You don't go into here and put map routes for all the different things you want MVC to do. Because MVC also has its own routing middleware. In fact, when you say use MVC, all that is a piece of middleware that knows about routing and calls MVC stuff when routes match. So MVC is routing middleware. That's how you add it to the middleware pipeline. Right? So typically, you would have like the default like flat middleware pipeline. One of these in here would be use MVC. You would configure it the same routing that you've always used in ASP, the same type of routing that you're used to having in ASP.NET, and then it would take care of routing requests through to different MVC stuff as it was supposed to, rather than doing map in order to do like your own stuff. This is just an interesting thing that I'm showing you and how to do, and there is some uses for it. So let's look at this. This comes from the docs website, docs.asp.net, and this kind of lets you flow through what middleware is. We talked, logically now you understand middleware as a pipeline and the HTTP context flows through the pipeline, right? The way that actually works is that each individual middleware is a class which when it's constructed is given a function which points to the, which calls the next, the, an invoke method on the next piece of middleware. Now what that means is each one of these middleware basically comes in, it does something, then it calls the next method, which calls the next piece of middleware, which can do something and then call the next method of middleware and so on and so forth, until eventually something doesn't call next. And it's up to each individual middleware to decide whether it's going to call next or not. It can or it cannot, depending on what it's going to do and what it's trying to do. But this is just a method call chain, right? This is just a standard call stack where a method calls a method calls a method calls a method. So if you're writing the logic inside your piece of middleware that calls next, you can do stuff before or after the call to next, right? So what actually happens with the middleware pipeline is the context comes in, it goes through, each middleware can do something, and then it can call next, and then it can do something on the way back because the stack has to unwind. So the context goes all the way in, and then it comes all the way back out, and every piece of middleware can do something to it on either place. Okay? Does that make sense? A few people are nodding, a couple of people are like, maybe. Okay. So let's do something a little bit interesting, taking advantage of that fact that it comes back. So one of the things that our application will do right now is if we go MVC/MVC, for example, then it gives me a 404, which is interesting. It's also somewhat unfortunate that all I get is a blank page and I have to open the inspector to find out that I've got a 404. So, because most of you didn't know about the dependency injection and stuff, we're going to go a couple of things here. Super quickly, I'm going to add logging to my application in order to show you how you add logging. So, microsoft.extensions.logging.console, so that we've got a console logger. All right. I'm going to say .NET restore. And then over here, inside my program, inside my startup CS, I'm going to accept a type called iLoggerFactory. And I am going to add the console logger to my LoggerFactory. Right. This is the LoggerFactory is added by default all the time from like configure services. And here I'm just saying add the console logger for me. And then I'm going to say .NET run over here. And magic will happen. Okay? Yes. Are you going to ask me why I didn't do it in configure services?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought you might. Just because. I want to wait until I don't. So I could have, probably, given my little application. In reality, though, I want to wait for all of the configure services stuff to happen because anybody could be playing with the LoggerFactory or doing anything in LoggerFactory. So I'm just waiting until my configure method, adding console there, and I know everything is kind of good and everything is done. Theoretically, I don't believe there's a problem with adding it in configure services if you really want to. So when I said magic is going to happen, this is the magic that started to happen. So because I added a console logger to the logger factory, which was in my services collection, and because ASP.NET and all of our framework use that dependency injection system to resolve their types, you just started to get logging from ASP.NET without us doing anything. You're just getting start request and request messages and how long it took, kind of magically, because ASP.NET internally says service collection, it's not service collection, but whenever we're going to log, we accept a logger for the class that's going to log, and if you've configured one, you get one, a console logger. If you haven't configured one, we don't get one, so we don't do any logging. And there's some configuration you can do to control what outputs you get, and you can get NuGet packages that have other like other file log providers like Serilog or something like that, so that all the logs start going to some other logging system. And that's how basically how you can set up logging. Okay, so now the interesting thing is you'll be able to see the 404 happen in here because of logging. And what we're going to do is we're going to go and add the Microsoft.ASP.NET Core.diagnostics. That's what we're going to add. -RC2-*, same as all my others. And then we're going to go restore it. We're going to go to get the package. And what the diagnostics package has in it is a bunch of middleware around diagnostics and helping you with diagnostics type problems. So because I have the diagnostics package, I can now go app.useStatusCodePage, status code with redirects, and I can say /this. Okay? Does anyone have any idea what that's going to do? No? That's because it's terribly difficult to know what this is going to do. The zero is replaced with the number that the status code that this status the status code that this meth middleware picks up. So we talked about how you can do something in a piece of middleware either on the way in or on the way back. The status code middleware doesn't do anything on the way in. But on the way back, it says, is this an error status code? Or is it an OK status code? If it's OK, it doesn't do anything. If it's an error status code, it redirects, it returns a redirect to / whatever the status code happened to be, .html. Right? So what I'm telling our web application now to do is redirect people to my 404 page if they get a 404. And I'm going to go make a 404.html page, right? So if we go /mvc/mvc and get a 404, you can see it tried to redirect me to /404 here, but it still says hello from end of pipeline. And if we go into inspect, we want to do /mvc/mvc or /mvc/blah-de-blah. So you can see I sent a request to our server. I don't know if you can see that. I sent a request to our server with the blah-de-blah. It returned a 302 and then directed us over to this other thing and it said okay. So for some reason, our web server, when we're requesting 404.html, it says, sure, here you go, and it gives you hello from the end of the pipeline. Does anybody understand why? Huh? Sorry? It is the last thing in the pipeline. And that is very close to answering the question perfectly. Which piece of stuff inside of my middleware pipeline here would know how to return a 404.html page? Right? Static files, but there's no static files in here, and so this is part of like the pay for what you use, which means that if you don't have the static files middleware in your project and you don't call static files, then your little custom web server that knows how to serve your application doesn't know how to serve static files, which means you can't serve 404.html. However, because our pipeline hasn't got any restrictions on, like, we don't try and we don't look at, like, the incoming request anywhere in here, and then this last piece of terminal middleware here, we just say, yep, return this string, which means it's going to return that string regardless of what we're asking for if it ever gets to that point in the middleware pipeline. Yes? Will it do infinite redirects? I think we catch that. But theoretically, you can make that happen. But there's a few things that catch that. I think the browsers have detection of infinite redirect loops, and there's a bunch of infrastructure around catching those types of problems. So we've added that. So now we can go app.useStaticFiles. Now, and we can say, okay. So here's an interesting thing. The other thing that I'll talk about first before we go down this path is, what if I move this line to here? What happens now? Do I get my 404 HTML? Who thinks it's still going to be the same? Nobody thinks it's going to be the same? One person, a couple of people? Okay, let's run it. To make it exactly the same, let's do this. Okay, .NET run. Okay, so a couple of you, not very many of you, but some of you thought that MVC was going to return the same thing. And I assume some of you thought it was, but you didn't want to put your hand up in case you were wrong. So now I'm back to the behavior I used to get where I just get a 404 straight in my browser, right? It doesn't try and redirect me to the 404.html page, right? Why is it? Huh? MVC ends the pipeline, yeah? MVC handles a request, and there's nothing on the way back up to catch it. The order of middleware is important because it's a method, it's a chain of method calls, right? Next to next to next to next. So if this method call happens and then it calls this use status page, this thing can only see on the way back stuff that happened after it. So it would only handle 404s that come from this bottom thing here. And that thing never returns 404s because it always returns 200 and gives you a string that says hello from the end of the pipeline. So order matters. It matters for those reasons. Does that make sense? Yeah. How are you going to figure out the order? By understanding everything that everything does. Because you'll add some middleware and it won't work, probably. But in general, for most of you, the ordering, whilst it's important, it's not usually very difficult to reason about once you understand what middleware is and that you're just calling methods, right? Because you think, if this request is coming in, what things should be able to look at it first, right? And put things earlier in the pipeline that need to be earlier and later to be later. Yeah? Will there be a pipeline viewer? Maybe. Not from us, probably, at least not initially. And it's actually fairly difficult to write, but you could try. Yep. Like yeah. Pretty much. This is similar to that sort of stuff. And yeah, you can mimic that orderings however you see. Typically, it's not going to be as big a problem for you as you think it is. It's generally fairly okay. To understand what it is. And you're not typically using all that much middleware in a standard ASP.NET application. And in fact, you can probably, for many of you, just use what we scaffold for you in file new and never really have to play with it much again, for the most part. Yeah. Where does Owen fit in? That's an excellent question, sir. Gold star for you. So does anyone else know what Owen is? Okay, cool. So Owen basically is a standard for how for this type of middleware stitching together. Right? It's designed to be an abstraction that everybody could implement that would allow all people who wrote middleware to be able to interchange them and use them. This pipeline, whilst modeled off Owen and it can accept Owen middleware, is itself not an Owen pipeline. The reason for that is because the Owen abstraction is very, very light in that it's just a func and a dictionary, whereas we give you a strongly typed HTTP context to flow through the pipeline. But otherwise, the concepts are exactly the same. And there is actually an app dot, like, use Owen. There is in a package, there is a use Owen method which will accept any Owen middleware and will go for you. And you could just do like use in here to get to it probably. But yeah. Does that make sense? Cool. Okay, so we're gonna add use static files. Okay, and then we're gonna run again. Does anybody wanna hazard a guess as to whether or not this is gonna work now? Can you read the code? Can we review my code? There you go. Do you think it's gonna work yet? Where should I put the 404 HTML? In a www root. In a folder called www root. Okay. New file, 404.html. Cool. HTML, body. Hey there, this is an awesome 404 page. Oh, and sorry about it not working. Isn't that basically what all 404 pages are today? Okay, will it work now? Yeah? Okay, let's do it then. He's reviewed my code, I've checked it in, ready to go. This apparently is a bug that a code review didn't find. I don't know. So, what happened? There's a couple of things that happened, and I'll just take you through them. First, nowhere did I tell anybody ever that the www root folder existed. Right? If I don't tell the web host builder that there is a web root, it picks something, but I didn't tell it that I could use a www root. In fact, it doesn't even have to be called www root. It could be called public. Doesn't matter, because it's what I decide to build my custom web server, not what all of the baked-in stuff is. Okay, so I don't have that. Now, what the real problem is when I show .NET, when I do .NET run, where is my application running from? Does anybody, I'm assuming that nobody knows, but so in I have a bin folder. When I do .NET run, it compiles my application into bin. Then it runs it from inside the bin. So let's have a look inside the bin that I have here. This is the output of my compiled .NET core application. I have a deepdive.dll, which is the name of my app. I have a bunch of stuff, some PDBs and a few JSON files that the runtime uses in order to launch my app. I don't have a www root folder in there, or a public folder, or a 404.html. Because nothing in my toolchain knows so that it should copy those things over to my output. So in here, I can say content public to tell .NET that when I build, I want you to like copy stuff around for me, please. Right? Because it's just a console app. And this is a thing to build a console app. Why would it know to go and take this HTML file and move it over into the bin so that it can serve it for you? It doesn't know anything about that. All right. Now I have a public folder, and inside my public folder I have some stuff. Okay. So now, do we think it's going to work now? Yes? Because I said I was going to tell you what all the problems were? Okay. Now. Yeah! Awesome. Now I have an awesome 404 page. /MVC. Enter. Yeah. And then there's an interesting thing happening here though. You can see over here in my network, right? I request MVC, it returns a 302, and then I request again to the 404.html page, right? Yeah? So there's a blah bouncing happening because I'm saying, go get me the thing, and it's saying my thing is moved. What's up? The static file middleware by default serves static content from the web root, and the web root is a concept of the host at the moment. You could configure static file middleware to reserve stuff from some arbitrary folder, and then yeah, it would absolutely be on the static concept. We wanted to first class as much as possible the concept of a web root that is distinct from where you put everything else, just to help people put public stuff in a public folder and non-public stuff not in the public folder. And we just happened to call it www root because people thought that was familiar already. Okay, so let us continue on this magical journey. What I was saying is we're going to the thing and we're getting back a 302 and then we're requesting a 404.html and we're getting a 200. There's other ways that you can do this though. Does this all resonate now? Actually, before I continue, does this like way how you would handle a 404 make sense? Given that you've got middleware pipeline, and it's just looking at the status codes on the way back, it doesn't make sense. It's not resonating yet. Okay, so let's look at something interesting. Let's say use status codes with re-execute, right? And then I can say /error, And then I'm going to go app.map, right? And I'm going to say slash error. And then it's going to be an error app because I've made another fork off of the pipeline, off the middleware yet again. And then I'm going to say inside my, what this application is going to do is it's going to say error app. It's always just going to return a single string right now. And it's going to do the same thing that the bottom one does, except it's just going to do dot write async, and it's going to be there was an error. Can I use the status codes? I can get them. They're on the context. Send it to a different action? Yeah, that's what this is doing. I'll show you. I'll talk to you about it in a minute. Huh? Oh, by status code? Yeah, I believe you can. Yeah, you can still put this in here, and it will do that. Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, there was an error, and this actually probably shouldn't be this. This should be like this, probably. You know, there's somebody out there who knows something about async in the audience, I know. Okay, but that doesn't matter. Okay, let's do .NET run. And let's see what happens this time, shall we? Is anybody going to hazard a prediction while this compiles, or are you too scared of predictions now because you were all wrong about the 404 page working? The status will be 404 on the quest. Very good, sir. Top of the class. Okay, so /MVC/MVC 404, and sorry, there was an error, right? But the point that I was showing was it's not coming all the way back out of the pipeline. So what's happening here in this is we have this pipeline, we have this middleware one here is the status code with redirects. This is throw returning a 404. This thing is saying, it was a 404. I'm going to change the path that we're asking for, and then I'm going to call next again without actually returning all the way back to the client and then going back. Right? So you've just re-executed the same in the same request, within the same request. And because it didn't do anything to set the status code to something different, because it's not a specific request, the status code is still 404 from when it came up the first time. So it stayed 404. Whereas before, it was getting a redirect, and then you were making a request for a HTML file, and we were 200 okay, because the request for the HTML file was fine. Right? Cool. Okay. So, that is something else again. Now, I was going to talk about Project JSON before I left. That's right. Before we got too far into the end, because we're starting to get close to the point where we need to stop and let people ask questions, right? So I said I would come back and talk about NetCore app, and because I wanted to make sure I got through enough of everybody understanding middleware, enough a little bit more before I started to digress into like .NET specific stuff and not ASP.NET specific stuff. NetCore app is the TFM you would use when building an application with the .NET CLI and running it, right? There is another one called .NET Standard, and it has numbers like 1.5 and stuff. And what's the reason these two things exist is, does anybody already familiar with the term .NET Standard, perhaps? Have you heard it? One or two people have heard it. So we have Windows phones, and we have Microsoft bands, and we have, you know, at some point there's going to be like a Microsoft necklace, let's say, and like all of these things coming out where .NET wants to run. How do you make sense of .NET when there's all these different places that can run .NET? They all have different requirements for bits and pieces of the BCL that they want to be able to run, and they all have these potentially crazy implementation differences. And there's different operating systems now that you have to run on. How do you make sense of all that? Right? And then, same as making sense of all that, now that the BCL is all on NuGet, and I can add references to system.blah, and it downloads system.blah from NuGet.org to put it into my application, suddenly the BCL that you used to just have a nice thing called the BCL and you could reference is a million NuGet packages, and you need to think about which ones you're going to pull in. And, oh, I don't think that system.io doesn't work on the necklace. System.io doesn't work on the necklace because there's no file system, so I can't pull in the IO one there. So if I want to be able to make an application that works on both the necklace and on Windows desktop, then I'm going to have to do something funky here to make it work, right? What net standard is the set asset of stuff which we confidently think will be able to go to all of the places where .NET's going to be. Which means after once we ship this stuff, if you build a class library and a package that targets net standard 1.5, any platform that comes out that supports net standard 1.5 or higher, your thing will run on. And picking a net standard version will limit or will control some of the stuff that you get. Then outside of that, if you're going to start pulling in other packages independently of that, they'll have to they have to support at least the net standard that your application supports. And as long as that all works, then the world should be good. And you can just target a net standard and be confident that you'll work everywhere where the net standard is supported. Okay? Yeah. No, so Net Core App is different. That Net Standard is for like when you're going to build a class library that you want to run everywhere. Net Core App is saying, I am an application that runs on the .NET Core CLR, like this experience, the .NET CLI and the building and compiling and .NET Run and stuff like that. It's an application model TFM, basically, yeah, kind of like that, huh? Yeah, I think Net Standard App is what it was. And it's now Net Core App, one of those. But anyway, it doesn't matter. If the name changes, that's what the two concepts are. One of them is an app that is opting into a particular way of operating, and Net Standard is defining the set of stuff that you're going to be able to work everywhere. Yeah? No, it just needs to keep incrementing whenever we add anything. So basically, whenever you make any significant changes to the set of surface area, or you add something, you kind of need to rev it to make it a higher number. Yeah. That's about it. No, it's, I don't think it's not really that type of version number. I don't think so anyway. But I don't know. And there's several versions of Net Standard. It's like 1.10 to 1.6 or something to make sense of all of the stuff that we've already shipped in the past. So like Net Standard 1.0 would be like an older version of desktop.net, for example, would work with a Net Standard 1.0, for example. Okay, does that all make sense? Awesome. Okay, so we've talked about middleware. We've talked about the middleware pipeline. This now... To come back to our ASP.NET-ness, this is how what our middleware pipeline looked. Just to kind of ground you again, this is what it looked like after we'd done a whole bunch of that stuff. You've got a status code check middleware. You've got some static files middleware. You've got the map to go to MVC, and then you've got a return string, right? And all the request comes in and goes back out. I think it seems like most of you kind of got there. Okay, there endeth all of the content that I had especially planned to entertain you with this afternoon. So, does anybody want to see anything different? Or would you like to ask any questions? Or would you all like to leave? Yes?
When you did the error with the execute, how would you serve a static file?
How would I serve a static file there? Okay, that's interesting. Let's talk through this. Let's talk about how this works. Okay, so what is this re-execute doing? Right? You're going down, you're coming down the pipeline, it's getting a 404, you're coming back up, and then it's just re-executing the pipeline with something, right? So what would happen if I did this then? Because it's just making a request, and it's just saying, going down, it's just calling next again with the new path that I just gave it. And then some other piece of middleware later on in the pipeline needs to be able to handle that path. So you just need to make this a path that the static file middleware would handle.
And
to switch the order in this case, yeah, because you see the static file middleware is before the thing, right?
Would the URL be a thing?
Huh?
Would the URL be a thing?
Would the URL be updated? No, the URL will stay the same as it was when you made the request, and you would just get an error page on the screen. Okay, yep. Yeah, so up here in configure services, before the host calls configure services, it adds a few default services that are always available to everyone. iLoggerFactory is one of them. iApplication Environment is another one. There's basically some hosting services that you get, and LoggerFactory is one of them. Yeah. Otherwise, you would have had to call like add logger up here in configure services in order to get it. Right. Yeah. How do you know what all... How do you know what's available in Project JSON? There'll be a documentation that outlines everything. There is one kind of on GitHub now. It also has a schema. So when you go like this, you can get IntelliSense inside edits, inside all good editors near you. There's a website, and I can't remember its URL, but it's on the internet. You can contribute to it. Yeah. You can contribute to it. There's a whole bunch of other JSON schema files there as well. It's called like jsonschema.org or something like that. Schema store, yeah. So when you're in Visual Studio, it actually shows you the URL for the schema inside Visual Studio, and you can see it. There's like NPM and Bower JSON schemas up there and a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah. How would you use host headers and SSL sets? So SSL certs kind of independent. They happen before this, because they're part of kind of the network protocol. So you would need to configure stuff to be able to do that. Kestrel will. I don't know if it does support SSL right now, but it's kind of transparent to your middleware pipeline. Headers. Depends on what you're talking, what you're trying to do. There's a bunch of stuff you can do in middleware with headers. You have access to them all throughout the pipeline. So depends what sort of header you're talking about. If you're talking about like authorization and things have headers and things like that, then there's authorization middleware, which look at authorization headers and then do stuff for you. I see. So you're talking about like adding headers to your own stuff? Just the host headers. Yeah. Yeah. So there's some middleware that helps you do that. So that as the request is coming back, you can just add a header to the header middleware whenever you like. So it's actually fairly easy. Yep. They're extension methods on iApplication Builder that live inside the package for the middleware that they are adding to the pipeline. Yeah. Super easy. So creating your own middleware is a class that has a constructor that accepts a request delegate and a method called invoke. So it's basically, it looks like this. And it has a constructor that accepts a request delegate. Like this, and you assign that to like underscore next, and then you assign it to underscore next to next, and then you create a then you have an invoke method which looks like public task. Thank you. Invoke, and it accepts a HTTP context because you're passing the context per request. And then inside here, you do what you're going to do. So when you want to go to the next middleware, you invoke underscore next, right? And you give it the context, something like that. Await if you want to do something, right? So now you could either do stuff here to do it before, and so you could do something like here, like if, so this would be something like if I should handle this, then return, do something to the context and then return, and then else, await, right? Call the next thing in the pipeline. And then on the way back, I could say like, if I should change this, then, do something to the context, and then that's it. It'll just flow back and return from there, right? Cool. That's what it looks like to write a middleware class. And then to add this to your pipeline, I showed you with extension methods, but you can just call like app.useMiddleware and give it my app.useMiddleware and just give it like my middleware class. Right. Didn't really have enough time because we're basically out of time now to go through and build up a whole middleware. I probably could have, but I would have given it probably as much attention as I just did. So. There's a lot of examples. There's good docs on docs.asp.net for how to write middleware and examples of what you might be able to do. And all of the middleware that we've written are on GitHub in the asp.net repos, so you can go look at the diagnostics middleware and see how it works and if you really want to play with it. You can do a lot. All the stuff inside middleware is where you would do all the stuff that you previously would have done with like HTTP modules and HTTP handlers and all those sorts of things. All that stuff will be done in middleware in ASP.NET Core. Cool. Yeah? Could I have used WebRoot in the content? Oh, here?
Yeah,
could I have used WebRoot? Content is new. Yeah, so I just pulled in the console, the specific implementation of the sync that I wanted, which depends upon logging abstractions because it has iLogger of T and stuff in it. So if you can get iLogger of T with abstractions, but what's the logging sync going to be? Like, what are you logging to?
No,
and anything that you're logging to is going to have to depend on abstractions. So.
I just remember seeing logging.abstractions in there, but
the console. Yeah, because it has to implement the interface that's in abstractions. So, yeah. Cool. Okay, thank you everybody for listening. It has been a pleasure to teach you something today. I hope you all learned something. Who now has no idea of what middleware is? Does anybody? Still a few people, excellent, that's what I like to see. Thank you.